Welcome to the Business Animal Podcast. Saddle up for a gallop to the top of the animal industry, where you'll learn how to tame your wild business beast with tips, techniques, and tools that will take overwhelm to obedience school and have you wagging your tail with joy.
Hey there, business animals. I'm Kim Beer, and I follow the ideas.
And I'm Betsy Bird, and I build the process, which might explain why our podcast runs the way it does. Now that I think about it, there might be something to that.
Maybe that is. So, yeah. Well, I do say we have, if you listen to the last episode, we did Better About Not Rambling. You have to give Betsy and I a break. We really enjoy each other's company and we love the subject we're talking about. So we can get down some rabbit holes really quick. And yeah, we can initiate more rabbit holes than ChatGPT. And that's saying something, because chat can definitely form rabbit holes everywhere. Everywhere.
Every so often, yeah. I feel like chat has a little road sign that says veer.
Yeah. Veer. This, yes. It definitely loves branching logic.
For sure.
That's a programmer thing, I think. Oh, here, let's do this. Well, it definitely wants to keep you addicted. But okay, so our subject for today, just to keep us nice and tight and on time, our subject for today is talking about what to do if you don't have a brand. Like, we've talked now on a couple of episodes about brands being very important. And Betsy brought up the probably very real function of there's people listening to this podcast that don't have a brand. And heck, even if you do have a brand and are pretty aware of it, maybe you could learn a few things that deepen your brand awareness and also deepen the ability for you to be able to communicate your brand out into the world so just the right customers are coming to your door. So in the big three today, we are going to talk about building the very beginnings of a brand. And the first step in that is to name the problem that you are fiercely committed to solving. And then number two is to decide who you are not for, which is incredibly important in this process. Hear me, baby entrepreneurs. We are talking directly to you because both Betsy and I work with startup businesses and people who are just having their first entrepreneurial experience. Hear me loud and clear when I say this, you are not for everyone. And that is exactly the way it should be. And when you're marketing to everyone, no one is listening. So we're going to help you out by helping you refine that by deciding a little bit about who you're not for. And then finally, we're going to close up with that feeling that you want people to have after they have interacted with you or worked with your business, and helping you determine how to capture that in a way that'll help you shape your brand as you're moving into your business. So I am going to start us off by talking a little bit about what a brand is and how it relates to the problem that you're solving. So I mentioned this in the last recording that we did about branding being really something that's created between you and your customer. Like, you start the process, yes, but the way your customer responds to the process that you started is really what will eventually form your brand. And if you are someone who already has a brand, if that feels out of alignment, there's likely a disconnect where you and that customer's response are not connecting. And that's important to understand. If you don't feel like your branding is always hitting, or if not the right people are showing up to your business, that's where the disconnect has actually happened. But the beginning parts of your brand begin with the experience that you craft to solve the problem of your target market. Even if you are an artist making art, you solve a problem. And you have to get your head wrapped around the transformation that your customer, client, consumer, however you want to refer to them, that they are trying to make in their life. They're looking for a transformation. They're not buying necessarily a product, they are buying the transformation, even if it is a product. If you sell a widget, that widget changes their life in some shape or fashion. That's the problem that is being solved. Then once you start to craft that message, you craft the experience that you deliver in the helping of the solving of the problem, you further define that relationship by how those consumers and customers and clients respond to that experience, because they're going to bring their uniqueness to the situation and it's going to alter how it shows up. ultimately, your brand is a living entity that is refined by the interaction between you and your customers over time.
I'm going to talk about some of the baby entrepreneurs I know. So some of these baby entrepreneurs that I work with and stuff have really, when they come to me, usually the idea of a brand for them is that they opened a Facebook page, bought a logo off of Etsy, and now they have a brand. And that's it. Like, and they don't put together that there's more to the process for them. One of the big things that we work on is helping them to create the direction of, okay, what problem you're helping to solve? Like, how are you helping to solve things? Because if you're not solving a problem for your client, why are they your client? What do they get out of the process and the transformation, as you said? So one of the big sentences I use a lot is helping blank stop doing blank so they can finally blank.
So there you go.
It's a really simple sentence. Just break it down. What are you doing? Helping middle-aged women stop doing household chores so they can finally enjoy life.
Hey, I want to know. I'm a customer.
You're interested in that, right?
I'm interested. I'm ready to buy. I am ready to buy right now.
I'm like, I am all about that product. Helping dog owners stop talking to their dog as a human and start using dog language so they can finally stop punishing their dog for being a dog.
That's another great one. I'm a customer. Sign me up.
You can take that sentence and it's literally as simple as helping blank stop doing blank so they can finally blank. And
absolutely,
answer that for your clients. What do your clients need? How can you solve that problem for them?
So let's take that to some people that I know are both of our client bases that listen to this. And let's talk about that from, that's easy if you're a coach. It's easy if you've made a product that solves a problem. Where it gets sticky, where I find it gets sticky, is let's take that for the person who wrote a book. Okay. Or the person who does artwork, the artist. So if we were to say that for the person who wrote a book, let's say you wrote a fiction book. Let's say you wrote a story about, I don't know, your experience with horses. Helping my reader stop being uninspired and finally able to recognize themselves in my character. How's that? That was off the cuff.
How about this one? For those of us who have written nonfiction books on this podcast, of which there might be one or two of us.
Yeah, there might be one or two of us who've done that.
So how about this? Our good friend Kara and I wrote a book about photography poses that sell for horse photographers. So helping new and established horse photographers stop posing their clients poorly so they can finally make photography or make images that sell.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That works as well. You've got to, sometimes some businesses, you have to stretch a little bit to get the to fit in those sentences. But I promise you, my dear artist friends out there, you definitely can fit in these sentences.
It's also important to make note that while we're giving examples, some of those are relatively general examples. And like you can say helping free-spirited dog trainers, like you can narrow it down. It doesn't have to be all middle-aged women. Maybe it's
but it would
women.
Just relate to middle-aged women better, don't we?
Yes, we do. You can narrow it down some for that. The important thing is to narrow it down, because if you just say helping people succeed, what do you want to do? I want to solve the problem and help people succeed. Okay. That's really broad.
That's way too general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
that's not going to get you your brand. Your brand is your unique way of doing it and your unique way of talking about it.
Yep.
And also, your sentence should be structured so that people who do not have that problem or do not want that final outcome aren't interested.
And on that note, let's talk about the second of our big three, which is deciding who you're for by deciding who you are not for. When you decide who you are not serving and who is not your ideal client, your messaging is going to get cleaner, your offers get simpler, and your confidence goes up because you actually know who you're talking to. So a lot of times when you have all these people who, and this is a baby entrepreneur problem, as Kim would tell you, is whenever you talk to them and you say, okay, I'm looking at your website and you've got all kinds of different people or groups that you serve. Like, what do you do? And they say, I take money from anyone who wants to pay me.
Yep.
Okay, great. I mean, that's fabulous. But the problem is the information that you're giving out there, the messaging that you're putting out there has to apply to all those groups. Your offers have to apply to all those groups. And you have to be confident talking to all those groups. And it's a lot easier if you narrow it down a little bit and you know who you're talking to.
Would yes, you agree, and Kim? Who you don't want to be talking to. And speaking as somebody who's a multi-hyphenate, multi-dimensional yep. serial entrepreneur like myself, this conversation of saying who you're not for doesn't have to mean that you have to go sit in a corner and only do one thing. It means that you have to know who ideally would work well for you in your business. And you also have to know who really doesn't fit. So I will give you an example in my world for my clients. You have to want and desire to create a transformation in your business or in your life to work with me. And I provide an experience that does that. Sometimes I do it with Gestalt and equine sessions here on the ranch. Sometimes I do it through business consulting. Sometimes I do it by helping you design a podcast. Sometimes I do it by hypnosis. Sometimes I do it by teaching photography. It does not mean that I have to pigeonhole myself into any one of those things. Now, I will say, as a multi-hyphenate, multi-dimensional serial entrepreneur, it is a hell of a lot easier if I only did one of those things. But because I do multiple of them, and I feel like I do those multiple things well, and I want to do them, it is possible. It's just not the easiest route. But I can tell you who I am not for. I am not for people who want it all done for them. Those people don't work well in my world. You've got to want to do your own work, whether it's on your business or on yourself or in learning your photography. You have to show up. That is really absolutely key in understanding and identifying who you're not for, even if you have multiple niches and multiple customer personas. The cost of not knowing this information and of not setting up your brand and marketing to reach the right people is very high and much more than in simply dollars. If somebody comes into my business and says, I want the whole done for you website experience, I can do that. Should I be doing it? Absolutely not. It's not my favorite thing to do. I don't have my experiences set up around serving that in the same capacity that I maybe did 15 years ago, because it's not what I want to do. I've learned I am no longer a baby entrepreneur. Learned that's not my happy spot. But what happens is it results in bad or mediocre reviews. And mediocre reviews are mediocre reviews. Bad reviews, a lot of times you can refute. The mediocre ones are the ones that hurt you the most.
They just linger forever.
Yeah, it also results in lackluster or avoided referrals. So if I provided you with that full website experience and you were talking to your buddy about it, you probably wouldn't refer to them for that full experience. But if you were the person who wanted to DIY it and learn it through support, you would probably find my programs amazing and helpful, and you would tell all your friends about them. And then they could choose whether they wanted to have the same experience you did or whether they wanted to find a different designer who could do it all for them. It does put stress on your nervous system, to be honest with you. I don't like doing those. The full service website packages, I don't want to do it. I don't want to write someone's copy and put it all on their page and do all of the design work and then do all of the behind the scenes minutia. I just don't want to do it anymore. And it's a stress on my nervous system if I do it. And it's on me if I take that on. And I've been that entrepreneur who looked at the bills that are coming in and looked at that $12,000 website price tag that somebody will pay. And I've gone, oh, should I do it? And as I've matured, I have learned to say no. Because despite the fact that I look at that and go, oh my gosh, that would do a lot for me, I also know the damage that it's going to cause in my own nervous system and in my own business. You do not need to put up a flashing neon sign that says no admittance. Like, I don't turn people away from exploratory call. There's not a flashing sign on my website that says I don't do full service website work. Instead, I just have a subtle interjection. It's pretty obvious by the fact I have website courses. That's the way that I do business. And if I have somebody come into my business and say they want that experience, what I will do is say, listen, I'm not your girl. I'm happy to support you in consulting and that kind of stuff, but I'm going to refer you to the person that's going to do what you are wanting to do. And maturity as a business owner means recognizing that and honoring it for yourself and for that customer.
I'm going to just throw a couple things out there as a multi-hyphenate myself, although not nearly on the scale of Kim,
because yeah, I'm at a whole nother level.
She will tell you, and I make fun of her all the time for this, she is at a whole nother level from pretty much anyone. But being a multi-hyphenate and everything and knowing what it is that you like to do and having the ability to do similar things with different audiences. I'm still attracting the same customers, but they're photographers versus being a client who wants to put art on the wall, for example. They tend to have similar psychographics, which we talked about a little bit on our previous episode.
The last show that we did,
I'm like, you know, where we were a while ago.
Where we were 20 minutes ago, but where these folks were two weeks ago.
But I have found that there are some differences, but a lot of the psychographics do tend to overlap within the various things that I do. But my other thing, and this is just a comment to those baby entrepreneurs out there, is you have to understand when it comes to building your brand, it's not a forever decision. You know, you're just choosing a starting point here. It's not carved into stone. A brand evolves all the time. So pick a place and start with your brand. And as you evolve and as your business evolves, you might evolve your branding. I think about I probably review my branding about once a year. And then I think probably about every 5 years, I've done kind of an overhaul on all of it with tweaking of certain things. But because my business has changed over that time. And I would imagine, Kim, you would say the same thing.
I would. And I also want to say something else about the hungry baby entrepreneur, because I also have been in your shoes. And the thing I want to say is I've done it. I've taken the full website design project, even when it's not advertised in part of my world, because I need the money or because I want that client for a joint venture or there's some other extenuating circumstance. The thing is, you can work outside your brand, outside your customer persona, outside what you do. Just don't make it your whole personality. Like you don't have to buy into that lock, stock, and barrel. If you want to take that one job, take it and then don't modify everything you're doing to fit that person who probably isn't a good fit for you moving forward. I know what it's like to need to feed your family and to need to support yourself. And by all means, I want you to hear this loud and clear. I'm not saying that don't do it. I'm saying work toward the maturity to where you don't have to say yes. And if that means if you have to take it now, take it. Slowly work your way out of that. I will advocate that for you and I will give you the permission slip if that's something that you need to do to feed your family, to be able to continue to be an entrepreneur. That's all permissible. I don't know how you feel about that, but I will tell my clients.
Absolutely.
Just don't make it your personality. You do not have to change everything to accommodate that one thing.
Exactly. And I mean, especially in today's world, a lot of entrepreneurs may be struggling with certain things and, you know, do need to feed their family or they're starting a business because they've lost a job or something like that. So I certainly understand the need to do it, but you want to always have the goal in mind that you're working towards where you don't have to do that. You can take a job if you want to, but you don't have to do it. And that's kind of the goal that you're working towards.
And I'm going to bring up point three here, because I think even if you do take that job, you do need to keep this third part of your brand in alignment into what do you want people to feel like after they've interacted with you? Because you do need to make that person who's not in your exact target market, if you do decide to serve them, you need to serve them with the same integrity as you would someone who is. And so you want to stay brand aligned. This is the way to keep that connection, is to make sure that individual that's kind of outside of what you're actually looking for in your target market, that they walk away with the same feeling that you're trying to craft for the other people.
Yeah. And you need to really consider feelings and how people feel about it, because when it comes right down to it, feeling something about a person is going to come before you trust that person. Mm-hmm. And trust is going to become before they do a sale with you. You know, you've all heard about the know, like, and trust factor. You know, I got to know somebody. I have a feeling about them. I like them. Then I trust them. Then I do business with them. And it falls into that thing. So you want to keep them having a certain feeling about you. And then the important thing is also the consistency of that feeling. You don't want to be like, well, this time I was really fun and energetic, but next time, forget it. We're going on the
I'm cranky
and foul mode now. You want them to have that consistency, because repetition with your colors, with your, you know, how you're messaging, with even your personality and stuff like that. Repetition is what builds recognition overall for your brand.
Absolutely. And I'll go back to that statement that I think it was Meredith. I can't remember Meredith's last name. She's a branding person we had on this podcast ages and ages ago. It was one of the first ones that Kara and I did. It was one of our first interviews. And she said, branding is the conversation people have about you when you're not in the room. And I think that customer relationship is absolutely key. So when you're thinking about that feeling you want customers to have after they've had the interaction or after they've had the customer experience with you, I think you have to stress test that, because I don't think we often tune into that conversation, which is the key conversation into understanding if your branding is working. Like, that's what you have to understand. So I think stress testing it is really important. And you do that by simply asking. Listening, social listening is a really good skill to have. Google yourself. Look on Facebook. We type in for the search for Facebook, for your business name, for your name. See the conversations that are going on out there amongst your customers, and it's truly enlightening. And if you can't get any intel or data that way, sit and have some conversations with your clients and see where they're at. It usually comes up in how people talk about you and the reviews. And it's very, very insightful to see how well you are in alignment with who you really want to reach. And if you have that disconnect problem where the right people are not showing up, so that is a huge clue as that conversation is not going the way that you designed it to go.
Absolutely. There's a lot of groups out there that say are like Knoxville Living, like generic groups, right? And people get into those groups and they post questions like, I'm looking for an interior designer. I'm looking for a dog trainer. I'm looking for whatever. And then hundreds of people flock to these groups and respond to these questions. And so it's a really good way to see how people think about your competition.
Yep.
How people think about your business. Because do they just say, oh, you want to talk to Kimberly Beer? Or do they be like, oh my gosh, Kim is the one you want to talk to. She is amazing. Let me tell you all the fabulous things that she did for me. Like, being able to see that and how they talk about things in the comments is super helpful. And it does a little bit of competition testing as well.
Absolutely. And what you learn is gold, because it's what helps you be able to shape your part of the conversation around your brand with your customers. And they can respond differently. You can adjust, or you can choose not to adjust, which I have done as well. This is one thing, and this is going to be kind of my ending salvo on this. As somebody who helps people with their marketing, I do experience at times in that same baby entrepreneur group that they'll bring me the customer that just complained about them. They'll be like, I have to fix this. And I'm like, do you? Do you really need to fix that? Is this person the person you want to have back in your business? No, I didn't like doing that at all. Well, then let them go. My friend Jen always says, bless and release them. This is why unsubscribes are great. You are not for everyone. And that is exactly the way it should be. So absolutely. That's my last little soapbox I'm going to get on. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us today at the Business Animal Podcast. You can connect with Betsy and I. Our websites are in the show notes, or you can visit thebusinessanimal.com. Hang out with us on social media. We look forward to talking with you and seeing you somewhere down the road. And good luck with your branding. If you are a baby entrepreneur, I know we kind of been a little hard on you today, but hang in there, friend. It's a ride worth taking.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Business Animal. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you learned something today, leave us a review. To learn more, find us at thebusinessanimal.com. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep your business well-trained with The Business Animal.